I walk away from him long enough to grab my things. What little I have. It's hardly more than the shirt on my back. I stare at the master bedroom for a long time, feeling like my heart is unmaking itself one piece at a time. Why couldn't you have fallen in love with a normal boy and then died a normal death alongside him? Why did you have to choose a horseman? Why did you have to insert yourself between him and the world? All this time has been a deadly tug of war between love and loyalty. How I ever eluded myself that it wouldn't come to this, I don't know. I pull on my boots, grab my borrowed coat, and then head for the front door. Pestilence is still where I left him, still standing guard by the television, still consumed with his own wrath. I walk right past him, heading for the foyer.
Where are you going?
He doesn't sound scared, or lost or uncertain. Does he seriously have no idea? Ignoring him, I reach for the front door and slip out. Outside? Fuck, it's cold. I stagger a little at the temperature. It's a wet, biting chill that wriggles under your skin and seeps into you. Already my ears are beginning to sting. I bring up the hood of my jacket. You'll never survive this. Weakened as you are, ill-equipped as you are, the door opens behind me.
Where are you going?
I stop at Pestilence's voice. Now there's something to it besides pent-up rage. Something that is still too confident to be worry. I think it might be shock and a touch of confusion. To rejoin humanity.
I haven't released you.
I wasn't aware that I was your prisoner. Clearly, he seems to have forgotten this little detail.
You are mine.
I pull my jacket closer to me. I am no one's. The horseman scowls at that, but doesn't try to argue the point. I appraise him. Just say I stayed. What will you do when all the people are gone?
I will endure.
What will you do when I'm gone?
I will keep you alive.
Even if you could. Even if you could protect me from every attempt on my life, because there will be more so long as I'm with you. You wouldn't be able to keep me alive forever. Eventually I'd age. I'd age and die, and then you'd be alone again. Only now there'd be no more humans. Just you.
And my brothers.
All right. You and your murderous brothers. Brothers who have been absent these long years. But other than them, you'd be alone. My body is beginning to tremble from the cold, and Pestilence's eyes go right to the action.
Cease this foolishness, Sarah. Come inside. I will warm you up.
Do you still not get it? You're killing off everyone. Did you seriously think I would stay with you after something like this?
You stayed with me before.
He's heated, but I don't miss the spark of fear at the back of his eyes. That was when I thought you hated what you were doing to my world. Back when I thought you could change. Isn't that the most horrible detail of all? I finally got what I wanted. Pestilence did change, just not for the better.
I'm doing this to avenge you!
I never asked for your vengeance. I asked for your mercy. Pestilence flinches at the word as though I slapped him. It's the very word that saved my life the night I tried to kill the horseman. The word that saved me every night since. Mercy. Did you ever think that maybe your God's mercy was never meant for me? That maybe it was meant for everyone else? No, he hadn't. If his expression is anything to go by. I turn, beginning to walk away, only to feel the warm press of Pestilence's fingers in the crook of my arm.
If I have to tie you to me, I will. But I will not let you go.
I swivel to face him. For all his lofty demands, his face is betraying his true feelings. I can see stark panic in his expression. He hadn't anticipated this. Pestilence, you can force me to stay with you, but you can't make me want to be with you.
But you do want to be with me. You called me love.
I look away. I did.
And you love me.
My heart beats faster. I may not have said the three words, but the horseman speaks the truth. My eyes move to him. I do. And it is not enough.
Not enough.
I think I might be hurting him worse than any weapon ever did. It's not enough to overcome whatever else lies in your heart. You clearly hate humankind more than you care for me. Pestilence's nostrils flare, but he bites back a response. He doesn't deny it. Ouch. Love is supposed to bring out the best parts of you. I continue, reminding him of our talk shortly after Ruth and Rob passed. not the worst.
I did this because I love you.
There's more fear in his eyes than before. Love doesn't work like that. But of course, there are other things that go hand in hand with love. Great, terrible things. Things that for the first time ever, Pestilence is beginning to feel. You let him into the Garden of Eden. You let him taste forbidden fruit. You gave him the knowledge of good and evil, and now you are both paying for it. I take a step back, committing his face to memory. Need to leave now, before I cave and return to him. I'd never forgive myself then. My heart, however, feels like it's being ripped in two at the prospect of leaving. Goodbye, Pestilence. Rotating around, I force myself to start down the steps leading away from the mansion. I haven't taken more than 5 paces before the horseman is on me. He scoops me up and carries me inside, kicking the front door closed as he goes.
What are you doing?
I squirm in his arms. No response. Now I truly begin to struggle.
Let me go!
He puts me down in the foyer. The room spins a little once I'm on my feet. So weak. Too weak. Can't stay here, though. I head back to the door, and again he picks me up and bodily moves me away. Again, as soon as he sets me down, I move towards the door. He cuts me off.
Sarah, I cannot let you leave.
He's begging me with his eyes, and I know he sees what I feel. I'm not strong enough, healed enough. All those weeks of traveling, all those wounds, even with the rest, my body isn't ready for more. And still, I drive it forward.
Pestilence, don't make this worse than it already is. I'm leaving, either with your blessing or against your will, but I won't stay here any longer.
The look on his face pulverizes the last of me. I can see his heart breaking in front of me. That raw grief lingers for just a moment, and then his features harden. Without a word, he picks me up again. I struggle in his arms.
What are you doing, Pestilence? Put me down!
Ignoring my demands, he moves me into the master bedroom and deposits me onto the bed. By the time I scramble off of it, taking an extra few seconds to let the vertigo pass, he's already made it to the door. With a parting look, he slips out, closing it behind him. Rushing after him, I grab the doorknob. I twist it, but the door won't open. The horseman must be holding it closed.
Pestilence, let me go!
He doesn't seriously mean to keep me here, does he?
You will forgive me.
Let me go!
But he doesn't. Pestilence boards up the master bedroom windows and blockades all the doors leading out. Not before I rush outside a few times and he has to drag me back in, but eventually, he manages to bar all the exits, leaving me trapped inside. And so I'm back to being his prisoner. At least the horseman is smart enough to keep his distance. I only see him a few times throughout the rest of the day, when he drops off food and water, his eyes sad and haunted. I think maybe whatever madness came over Pestilence will wear off, that he'll eventually unbar the windows and open the door and beg for my forgiveness, but it never happens. One day melts into the next and he stays away, coming to me only so that he can feed me. Not even at night does he slip into my room to express his tortured feelings for me or to fall asleep pressed against my back. My body misses him. My heart misses him. The latter is dying away beneath my ribcage, hating his betrayals yet wanting him still. I don't try to escape. What's the use? I can't slip past Pestilence unnoticed. I try not to think about all the millions of dead people that must be rotting right where they died. The TV stays off for that very reason. I can't bear to watch the news and see all those bodies. Not when I played a role, albeit unwittingly, in their deaths. That leaves me to pilfer through the few books in the room or to recite poetry from memory. Sometimes I can physically feel Pestilence's presence nearby, listening to the sound of my voice, lingering outside my door. The air feels saturated with all the things left unspoken and unfinished between us, things that have been left to decay alongside all those dead bodies. Life goes on like this for days, and then a whole week. Is this truly going to become our new normal? Pestilence keeping me like a caged bird, fated neither to die nor to fully live. When the door opens on day 8, Pestilence looks beaten down. His blue eyes are dim, and his golden blonde hair doesn't have its usual luster.
I cannot do this anymore. I surrender.
I freeze where I sit on the bed, Pestilence the Conqueror, surrendering? He removes his crown from his head and tosses it on the floor between us.
It's yours. I may have laid claim to the world, but I've lost you. The only thing I ever really wanted.
My pulse gallops as I stare first at the discarded crown, then up at the man who wore it.
You are free to leave. I will not stop you.
His eyes are bleak. Gone are the shadows in his eyes, but so is whatever spark of hope once laid in them. When they touch mine, he looks at me like he's drowning. I should feel exalted, vindicated in some small way, but it's just one more pain to add to the rest. For several seconds, I don't move.
Damn it, Sarah. If you want your freedom, leave before I come to my senses.
I slide off the bed, grabbing my things one by one, keeping a wary eye on him. I half expect him to slam the door shut in my face at any moment. This must be some trick, but it doesn't appear to be. I step past the threshold to the room, pausing to face him.
Go and join your doomed race.
His gaze reluctantly meets mine. How it now blisters. He is pain to match my own.
But don't expect me to kill you.
Too late, it seems. He's figured out the meaning of mercy. After everything Pestilence has done, I don't expect my leaving to hurt me so bad. I thought my heart had been abused enough to forget that it belongs to the horseman. I was wrong. I don't look at Pestilence when I leave him at the house's entrance. Walking away from him pains me enough. Seeing whatever emotion fills his face might make me waver. The horseman no longer wears his crown. It still lays forgotten in the bedroom. I head for the street, each step cutting me deeper and deeper. I've lost everything else. Family, friends, neighbors. Leaving Pestilence is going to bleed out the last parts of me. Where should I go? How many kilometers will I have to walk to get to the living? Will I die before then? I know Pestilence won't allow me to succumb to plague, but there are other ways to die. I could starve. I could perish from the elements. And if I don't die, what then? One step at a time. Burns. It's only once I reach the road that I turn back around. The mansion we've been staying in perches on a small rise. Standing like a sentinel at its threshold is the horseman. Pestilence watches me, his face solemn. For a moment, I think I see hope spark in his eyes. He thinks I'm changing my mind, steeling myself. I face the street once more and walk away. I don't hear the news, not for weeks and weeks. Still, I should have known. The truth was so obviously in front of me. Instead, it takes an outpost owner near the Canadian border to convince me beyond a shadow of a doubt.
That blighted horseman's gone. I swear it on the newly dead he is.
The man leans on the pine countertop as he adds up my things. The sight of the man himself, alive and bustling about his store, is surprising enough. But then again, I've ran into others on my way back up the coast. I assumed their presence had to do with Pestilence spreading his plague solely southward. Now I stare at the store owner, his news not computing. The world thought Pestilence was gone when we were holed up inside that mansion, but once I left, I assumed that he'd resume his travels.
You mean there haven't been any new sightings of him?
He shakes his head. No new sightings of him. An unpleasant sensation twists my gut, but I can't say what causes it. Maybe there's no longer anyone left alive to spot him. The territory from Washington to California is vast. Vast and full of the dead.
Have you not heard?
Last news I received was that Oregon, California, and parts of Mexico were infected. Even now, a chill slides through me at the thought. I played a role in that. The man pulls a slim case from beneath his counter. Opening it, he takes the raw ingredients from inside and begins to hand roll a cigarette.
Oh, you've missed so much.
Intentionally. I made a habit of avoiding small talk like this. The guilt, its own sort of illness. But now that we're on the subject of Pestilence, a sick sort of curiosity comes over me. I find I need to know how much of the world still lives and how my horseman fared. Hearing that Pestilence hasn't resurfaced since I left him, the loss feels physical, like a limb's been lopped off. The outpost owner finishes rolling his cigarette, licking the edge of the white paper to seal the seam closed.
Pleased to tell you that all the sick recovered. Damn miracle it is.
The man strikes a match and holds the flame to the end of his smoke, inhaling a grateful drag.
I'm not a praying man myself, but even I sent one up when I heard the news. Thought he'd left us to die.
Wait, what? I stare at him in shock. All the sick recovered. Can't seem to catch my breath. You mean all of those sick, they lived? It cannot be. I was with the horseman. I saw his anger, witnessed his unbending will. No way had he changed his mind.
Yep. Even us up north here recovered. News didn't bother mentioning that.
He frowns, like that's some great travesty when, oh my God, all those millions lived.
Fucking plague came back right as I was reopening my store. Thought I'd caught my death.
There's a pain in my chest that's equal parts joy and anguish. I don't want to believe him because if I've misunderstood, the disappointment might crush me alive. I brace my hands on the countertop as I sway a little. My God, Pestilence retracted his plague. I don't know how, but he did. He must have done it while I was confined to that damn room. I'd thought the worst of him then. And all the while he was curing the plague he'd brought down upon the masses. The only thing besides his love that I ever wanted, he gave it to me. Had I but turned on the fucking TV, I would have seen this. Pestilence stopped the plague and still I left him. I swallow back a choked cry. Why didn't he tell me? By God, that would have changed everything. And the fever, has it spread since then? Have to be sure I understand this correctly. The outpost owner frowns, considering my words.
Well, not that I've heard, though who knows where the world's at these days. It hasn't been back around these parts, and that's good enough for me.
I thank the man for the news and walk away from the outpost in a daze. My last encounter with Pestilence fills my mind.
I surrender.
He cast his crown aside. He had already reversed the plague by then.
I may have laid claim to the world, but I've lost you. The only thing I ever really wanted.
Why didn't he say anything? Did he think I was watching the news in that room? That I'd learned that he'd cured them all and still decided to walk away? These thoughts are gutting me. Because I'm still in love with Pestilence, and now, after vindicating himself, he's gone. By the time I return to my hometown of Whistler, I hear enough reports and first-hand accounts to believe the incredible. The plague really did disappear over the course of days. Just poof, gone, and the horseman with it. I try not to think about that. My heart aches enough as it is. I learned that, like me, people didn't believe the news. Not at first, at least. Weeks without incident had to pass before anyone dared to hope that the messianic fever was truly over and that the horseman had vanished. Then people began to hope in that ridiculous way we do that other things would return to the way they once were, that electricity would begin to work as it ought, that batteries would hold a charge and perhaps even the internet would eventually come back. They hoped in vain. The world never went back to the way it was. I doubt it ever will. Without the horseman by my side, no one recognizes me as the girl he kept. Despite the few blurry photos that once circulated, not a single person has connected the dots. When I finally arrive home, I get a hero's welcome. The firefighter who took a stand against the horseman, the woman they all thought long dead. My father holds me for a long time, and my mother openly weeps. I'm blubbering like a baby when I see them both alive. Plague never got them. Our reunion is touching and ridiculous and beautiful, and I just fucking love my parents. When I return to the fire station, Luke is the first one to see me. It's almost comical, the way the shock registers on his face.
Holy motherfucking shit! Burns!
He nearly overturns the chair he sits in when he sees me.
You're alive!
So are you! It's startling to see him after all this time. He looks a little leaner. Not that I should be surprised. Living through a Canadian winter post-arrival is difficult enough. Living through a Canadian winter in the frozen wilderness is nearly impossible. And that's what he and all these other survivors had to do to escape the plague. Luke's exclamation draws the attention of others, who are soon thumping me on the back and pulling me into hugs. Felix among them. They all escaped with their lives. All of them except for Briggs. Could just be his day off.
He didn't make it.
He didn't? My mood plummets. I was supposed to be the one that kicked the bucket, not him.
Surely he had enough time to escape.
They needed help at the hospital. He came back early and to aid the sick.
And he died for it. The more I look around, the more I notice other missing men. Who else?
Sean and Renee. Blake. Foster.
So many.
All died in the line of duty.
I should have known. First responders will always put their lives on the line for others. I get that itchy feeling beneath my skin. It should have been me. A dozen times over, it should have. Pestilence stopped the plague altogether because of you. Of course, that thought comes with its own strange pain.
How did you escape the horsemen?
They're all looking at me. I've dreaded this question since I realized there would be survivors in Whistler. There's so much I have to answer for, and I don't know what to include and how much to say, so I keep it simple. The horsemen showed me mercy. Surprisingly, life returns to normal, or at least as normal as I can expect these days. I move back into my apartment, though I spend an agonizing few weeks carting my belongings from my parents' house, where they were brought when I was presumed dead, back to my place. In the wake of my return, people have questions. So many questions. How did you survive the horsemen? Where have you been all these months? Why did it take you so long to come home? For most people, I get good at non-answers. For those who matter, I give them half-truths. At some point, I can't not. The truth is suffocating the life out of me. But even then, I don't share everything, like how I fell in love with a monster, or how in the end he saved all our miserable lives, how I recited poetry to him and felt him change from a nightmare to a man. I can't shake the loneliness I now feel. I first noticed it on the road home, when I bunked in abandoned houses or trekked over kilometers of unbroken snow. And now that I'm home, it seems to rush in from all sides. I'm drowning in my loneliness, and no amount of company can banish the sensation. Not even this, however, can compare to the horrible feeling of falling back into an old life when everything is now different. Like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. I hate it, but there's nothing better for me anywhere else. So I stay here in this drab apartment, and each day I go to the fire station and pretend I'm okay when I'm not. I'm really not. Sometimes my mind wanders to what impossibilities might have been if Pestilence were a human man, what it would be like to be with him without the baggage. But then if he were human, Pestilence wouldn't be Pestilence, so I guess it doesn't do to ponder the possibility. Some things are just not meant to be, I suppose. Now, glass of home-brewed and very suspect wine in hand, I reread a much-loved book of mine. Pre-Pestilence, I might have flipped through my collection of Shakespeare or Lord Byron. Hardcore lit bitch right here. But the greats are ruined for me, particularly Poe. His dark soul and macabre heart are too similar to mine. A knock at the door has me setting my book aside. While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Shut up, Poe. No one asked for your commentary. I might legit be losing my mind. Standing, I glance from the wine in my hand to the shotgun propped against the edge of the couch. I got two hands, and I need one to open the door, so what will it be, the gun or the wine? Tough decision. Night visitors are always suspect, and I'm not super trusting these days, but in the end, wine. Glass in hand, I open my front door.
Sarah.
I drop the wine. Pestilence fills the doorway, his golden blonde hair framing his face like a corona. His crown is gone. His bow is gone. His golden armor is gone. Even his clothes are different, not dark and pristine. He wears a flannel shirt and jeans, and on his feet are scuffed human boots. Pestilence, my heart thunders. Can't be real.
I am Pestilence. No longer.
He continues to stand there, not daring to come any closer. It's so unbearably hard, staring at him. He still looks like an angel, even in human clothes. Will he ever not look like a divine thing? But it's more than his sheer beauty. It took a long time to admit to myself just how far I fell for him. Too late, I realized that I loved everything about him. His heart, his mind, his very essence. But even as I realized it, I mourned it because by then, he was gone. And now I don't know what to do, whether to close the distance between us or keep away from him. I don't know in what state he's coming to me. I left him a broken thing. I bite the inside of my cheek. They said you just disappeared. He searches my face. And maybe I'm just imagining it, but he looks like he's trying to memorize each one of my features.
I can do many things, Sarah. But disappearing isn't one of them.
A surge of relief follows that statement. He can't just vanish and leave me. I stand aside, opening the door wider. Want to come in? Pestilence's gaze moves to the apartment beyond me, his eyes sparking with interest, and a want so fierce it makes my knees weak. My horseman came back for me. Carefully, he steps inside, glass crunching under his boot as he does so. His attention is everywhere, taking in each little piece of my humble life. Where are your things? I close the door, my eyes scouring him again. The bow that's never more than an arm's span away from him. The crown that almost always decorates his head. The golden armor that makes him look ever so otherworldly. It's all gone. I surrender, he'd said. He swivels to face me.
My purpose is served.
What does that even mean? And why does that fill me with dread? And Trixie? Had the creature served his purpose too? That would kill me. Pestilence jerks his chin over his shoulder. Only now, when I manage to tear my eyes off of the horseman, do I bother to look out my window. In the darkness beyond, I catch the barest shadow of his mount. Trixie Skills, the steed whose back I rode on all those weeks, snuffles in the darkness. His reins looped about a broken lamp post. I turn back around only to find Pestilence standing close, his eyes devouring me like a starving man. How did you find me?
I never left you.
My brows furrow.
Come now, Sarah. I wasn't just going to let you slip out of my life that easily. I'm far too stubborn and not nearly noble enough.
What is he saying? That the entire time I made my way back here, he shadowed me?
Besides, you were still recovering, and I didn't trust your fragile body to make the journey back.
I can't take in enough air. He cared. Even when he thought I didn't, he never gave up. So you followed me. He nods. And I never knew. Why didn't you ever show yourself? Pestilence glances down at his boots.
You had made your decision. I wanted to respect that.
He toes a stray piece of broken glass.
But I couldn't in the end.
And I'm so glad for it. You stopped the plague. He meets my gaze, his expression turning guarded.
I did.
Why? Pestilence's eyes are deep and true.
Because love brings out the best in you.
I swallow thickly. If the last couple months have been a nightmare, this is some wonderful dream. One where I get everything I want. I don't trust it. I've come to expect that things that appear too good to be true often are. Why should the one thing I want more than any other follow different logic? Back at that last house, why didn't you tell me you cured the sick? That would have saved months of this agony.
My mind was a mess at the time. I had not committed to my actions, not even after I set them in motion. Nor after I let you go. It took weeks of contemplation for me to come to terms with my decision. My heart spoke first. My mind had to follow.
His expression turned fierce.
I should never have let you go. I should have listened to you, spoke with you, fought for you. I'm only now learning how very complex humans are.
My heart beats madly at his words. Hope is beginning to surge through my veins, and that scares the crap out of me because all hope does is prime you for a letdown. And I'm not sure I can take another letdown. And the plague. It's gone for good? Pestilence gives me a sad smile.
Sarah, there will always be sickness and disease. That I cannot change. But my divinely wrought plague will never infect another. I have served my purpose.
And again, that one sentence fills me with a strange sort of dread. I tug on the sleeves of my shirt.
What happens to you now that you've served your purpose? I'm proud that my voice doesn't tremble like the rest of my body is beginning to. It shouldn't be possible to feel this much. Excitement and anxiety and fear are all churning inside me, but mostly fear. Fear for my horseman. I never asked him what would happen if he simply stopped spreading the fever. I probably should have. Pestilence's blue eyes pierce mine.
Come with me and find out.
That ache in my chest expands, but now it hurts with something that is halfway between pain and pleasure. There are so many things between us, like so many insurmountable things. I want him so badly it hurts, but I swear it feels like he's the one thing I can't have, even after all his wrongs have been righted. Pestilence closes the last of the distance between us. Gently, he takes my hands, staring down at my knuckles.
I may no longer be Pestilence the Conqueror, but I will fight for what I want. And I want you.
His eyes rise to mine.
Tell me you want me to.
I'm standing on the edge of a cliff. All I have to do is take one single step, and then everything can change. Everything will change. He squeezes my hands.
Come back to me. Quote me Poe and Byron, Dickinson and Shakespeare. Tell me your human histories. Share with me your memories. Let me taste your food and let me drink your wine. Let me make love to you and hold you in my arms until dawn. Share your life with me.
I stand there, still frozen, still sure he's some vision made to haunt my days. Sure, I'm going to wake. Pestilence's hands move to cut my face.
I was wrong about humanity. And I was wrong so many times when it came to you. Forgive me.
I press my eyes closed, then open them. He's still there, still gazing at me with his sad eyes.
Come back to me, Sarah. Please.
That damn word. The world distorts beyond my watery eyes. I'm going to die someday.
I know.
You're okay with that? His thumb strokes my cheek.
Sarah, I don't know how many minutes you get or I get, but I do know. I want to spend them all with you.
My heart hammers in my chest. I look at his face, his angelic face with those sad, solemn eyes. He really could be an angel. Maybe he is an angel if such things exist. I don't know. I don't know much of anything except that joy is a strange thing. And I feel it now with him just as I have felt 100 times before in 100 different little moments between us. I reach up and wrap a hand around his wrist. If you are no longer Pestilence the Conqueror, then what would you like me to call you? I lean a little into his touch. He gives me a shy, vulnerable smile.
Love had a nice ring to it.
All right, love. I notice his whisper of a smile at the endearment. What minutes I have left. They are yours. I am yours. There is a moment where it doesn't compute. My horseman's eyes are still haunted, and he looks like hope utterly abandoned him somewhere back in Washington. But then it does register, and his whole face transforms. First, his gaze brightens, his eyebrows hiking up, and then a smile that could outpace the sun spreads across his face. He leans down and takes my lips. And the kiss is an end and a beginning all at once. I'd like to say that everything from that minute on was some beautiful, breathtaking fairy tale. I'd like to say that I didn't drag Pestilence's inhuman ass back to my bedroom and sully the shit out of my sheets like the dirty freak I am. I'd like to say 1,000 things to airbrush the crap out of the night, but then that's some other broad story. The kiss has only barely begun when it goes from sweet to wild and desperate. He's my oxygen, and I haven't been able to breathe for months. My fingers move to the buttons of his flannel shirt, but my hands shake so badly from need and want and all this goddamn adrenaline that I can't seem to undo a single one. Pestilence pushes me up against the wall, his pelvis grinding into mine.
Oh, missed you so much. Love is unendurable when it spoils.
But, miracle of miracles, this love didn't spoil. It might have carved us up from the inside out, but in the end, it didn't twist us into monsters. It stopped Pestilence from killing the world. And it made me strong enough to walk away from him when he wasn't worthy. And in the end, it brought him back to me. I go at Pestilence's buttons again while the horseman peels my shirt off. The rest of our clothes quickly follow as I lead Pestilence to my bedroom. Only a faint oil lamp flickers in the darkness here. Well, it and my horseman's strange markings, the latter which haven't dimmed in the least. I touch them reverently as he lays me down on the bed. "They're still here," he trails kisses from my mouth, up my cheek, to my ear.
Of course they are, Sarah. They can't just walk off of me.
I turn and laugh into his lips. Earth has given you a smart mouth.
Earth has given me a smart woman, and she has given me a smart mouth.
His hand goes to my breast, and I gasp at his touch as it kneads the soft flesh. Pestilence was right to call love unendurable. I can't fathom how I managed to go this long without him touching me. I wrap my legs around him, wanting more, needing more. It's been so long. Oh God, I'm going to cry. We're about to bone and I'm going to cry. But then Pestilence is there, his lips pressing first to the corner of one eye, then the corner of the other.
Far too long. But that's all over now. There's no need for sadness anymore, Sarah. Your people are safe, and you are in my arms.
His mouth moves lower, now too busy tasting my flesh to tell me all sorts of pretty things, which is probably for the best because my core is throbbing something fierce. He kisses my breasts, taking first one peek, then the other into his mouth. I writhe against him as his ministrations light me on fire. All the while, Pestilence's cock burns against my thigh. How he has patience for foreplay right now is beyond me. Then again, I was always the kid who peeked at my Christmas presents before they were wrapped, so maybe when it comes to fun shit, I'm just overzealous. Pestilence draws away long enough to line us up. For one instant, he looks backlit, his golden hair luminous, his body glimmering in the darkness, and in that instant, he's a heavenly thing. Then the moment passes and he's a man once more. He pushes into me, his cock thick, the pressure of it exquisite. I can feel him everywhere. My horseman lets out a breath, staring down at me with beautiful, terrible eyes.
God almighty.
If I weren't feeling so damn emotional right now, I might have made some quip about not taking the Lord's name in vain. He learned that bad habit from me. I might have even laughed as I reveled in the intense connection being the two of us. Instead, I take his face, his glorious face, in my hands. I love you. He needs to hear it. I need to say it. Those words have been trapped beneath my sternum for so long. He moves in me, his eyes riveted to mine.
I love you too, Sarah Burns.
And then he shows me just how much he means it. Afterwards, the two of us lay in a tangle of sheets, and I could stay right here forever, my ear pressed against his chest, his heart pounding beneath me. He strokes my naked back.
There is one thing I kept. One thing my crown and armor were still good for. Would you like to see it?
I nod against him, though I don't really have any idea what he's talking about. I'm just too unbearably happy to think about anything else except for the fact that Pestilence is here in my arms. Gently, Pestilence moves me aside so he can slip off the bed and pad into the living room. I can't imagine what's coming. I gather up the sheets to my body and sit up as Pestilence comes back into the room. He kneels next to the bed and lifts his hand. His fist tightly closed, one by one his fingers uncurl, and in his palm rests a small gold band. His eyes glint.
Marry me, Sarah. Please.
My breath hitches as I stare at the ring, which looks impossibly perfect. Made from the last of his golden trappings. That's what he meant when he said he'd kept one thing from his crown and armor. My gaze rises to him. And then I smile.
Yes, I'm going to marry a horseman of the apocalypse.
I extend my hand and let him slide the band onto my trembling finger. I'm going to marry Pestilence. Wait. My horseman raises his eyebrows.
Wait, are you having doubts?
I can tell he has a hard time getting the last part of that sentence out.
No, but I want to call you something other than Pestilence. Not just an endearment, but an actual name.
For better or for worse, he's a man. He needs a proper name.
You mean like Trixie?
God, no, not like that. A human name? I instantly regret mentioning the word human. It's one of his triggers. But Pestilence doesn't look repulsed by the idea. In fact, he seems intrigued. He mulls it over for only a second or two.
All right.
All right? Seriously? It was that easy?
I confess, I have thought on this since we parted ways.
Last we spoke, he hadn't believed in personal names. He was Pestilence, and Pestilence was who he was. He was his purpose, and that was all anyone needed to know. Sometime during all those days and weeks we were separated, he changed his mind. What would you like to be called? His thumb twists the gold band round and round my finger.
Victor.
A shadow of a smile creeping along his face. I raise my eyebrows. I don't know what I was expecting. It's not like Victor is any less appropriate than Bill or Joe. It's just that Victor is really normal. I wasn't expecting normal. Just be happy he didn't decide on Elmer or Wolfgang. Victor. I grin as I stare at him. I like it. A lot. It's perfect. What made you choose it? He climbs into bed and takes me into his arms once more. I melt into the delicious heat of him. This still feels like a dream. Will it ever not? Will I ever wake up one day and not be amazed at the force of nature I fell in love with?
Victor is not so very different from Conqueror, is it?
I tense at that.
Worry not, dear Sarah. I am not clinging to my former ways.
He takes my hand and presses it to his heart. The steady beat of it thumps against my palm.
Rather, I am your Victor. You see, I came to conquer this land and its people, but instead, one of its people conquered me.
I know my eyes have gone soft. It's a good reason, no, a great reason. One that makes my toes curl. Pulling his head down to me, I kiss him, my lips making long, languorous work of the task. What happens now?
We go away. Always stay and hope the world learns as I have learned. Either way, we do it together. For all the minutes we have left.
Year 10 of the Horseman. The sun is setting when it happens. Victor drops his book, the spine hitting my legs, which are draped over his lap. I glance up from my own novel, my gaze going from the book to his ashen face. What is it? Gently, Victor moves my legs aside and stands. He walks a few feet before he leans heavily against the nearby wall. I set my own book aside, alarmed. I pretty much have to kick a path through the scattered children's toys to get to him.
What's the matter?
Is he having a heart attack? Is that even possible? When he meets my eyes, there's an old and familiar torment in them.
You may have stopped me all those years ago, Sarah, but...
His eyes going to our home's large balcony, which overlooks the Pacific.
I cannot stop my brothers.
A chill slides through me. We haven't even talked about this subject in months. For it to come up now and so ominously. Victor heads outside, driven by some force I can't sense, and I'm helpless but to follow him. He stands at the ledge, his hands gripping the railing so tightly I can hear the wood beginning to splinter. Amazing to think that those hands that can hold me so gently can also do this.
The wheel of fate has been set in motion. It still turns without my help.
Despite my unease, I smooth my fingers over his hand. Beneath my touch, his hold on the railing loosens.
I can feel it.
He does not bother to meet my gaze. His eyes move restlessly over the land.
My brother is waking.
I go cold all over. What?
Pray for the world, dear Sarah. War is coming.
The Four Horsemen, Book 1, Pestilence, by Laura Thalassa, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2018, Laura Thalassa, all rights reserved, recorded by arrangement with the author. Production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Jessica Threet as Sarah Burns, also performed by Gabriel Michael as Pestilence. Additional performances provided by Barbara Pinellini, Gregory Linnington, J.W. Rome, Gail Shallon, Matthew Bassett, Peter Holdway, Wynn Delano, Mark Harrietta, Bradley Foster Smith, Donald Guzzi, Elliot Dalton, Laura C. Harris, Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Jameson Hunt, Jonathan Church, Andrew Arceus, Jewel Harrison, Omar Carter Smith, Julianne Elliott, Karen Novak, Kenneth Charles, Christopher Williams, Holly Adams, Mort Shelby, Megan Hasty, Vanessa Thurlow, Jerry J. Marshall, Chris Stinson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Emlyn McFarland, Steve Wanall, Lily Beacon, and Nora Sofian. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Elliot Dalton. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Ruby Liebeschak. Original theme by Vanessa Thurlow. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed The Four Horsemen, Book One, Pestilence, you may also dig the Mercy Thompson series by Patricia Briggs. Keep listening for a preview of Mercy Thompson 1, Moon Called, in Smoother Than an Evening Ride on Trixie Skills, Graphic Audio.
Mac, the werewolf, was sitting on the step of my office door when I drove up Monday morning. I kept my face impassive, and showing none of the surprisingly fierce satisfaction I felt, I just handed him a heavy sack of fast food breakfast sandwiches and opened the door. I'd been raised around wild animals and knew how to tame them. A hearty welcome would send him off faster than harsh words if I judged him correctly, but food was always a good lure. Eat. I set out for the bathroom to change into work clothes. Save me one. The rest are for you. All but one were gone when I came back.
Thank you.
You'll work it off. Come on, help me get the garage doors up. I led the way through the office and into the garage. There's nothing pending today, so we can work on my project bug. The Beetle was unprepossessing at the moment, but when I was finished with it, it would be painted, polished, and purring like a kitten. Then I'd sell it for twice what I had put into it and find another car to resurrect. I made almost half my income refurbishing old VW classics. We'd worked a few hours in companionable quiet when he broke the silence.
Can I use the phone? It'll be long distance.
Long as it's not to China. I didn't sneak over to the office door to listen. I don't make a practice of eavesdropping on private conversations. I don't have to. I have very good hearing.
Hello? It's me.
My hearing was not so good, however, that I could hear the person he was talking to.
I'm fine. Look, I can't talk long. It's better you don't know. I know. I saw a news report. I don't remember anything after we left the dance. I don't know what killed her or why it didn't kill me.
Oh, no.
No, look, it's better just now if you don't know where I am. I told you I don't know what happened. Just that I didn't kill her. I just want you to tell Mom and Dad I'm okay. I love them, and I'm looking for the ones who killed her. I have to go now. I love you too, Joe.
There were a dozen stories that could account for the half of his conversation that I heard. 2 dozen. But the most prevalent of the cautionary tales werewolves tell each other is what happens the first time a werewolf changes if he doesn't know what he is. In my head, I translated Mac's half of the conversation into a picture of a boy leaving a high school dance to make out with his girlfriend under the full moon, not knowing what he was. New werewolves, unless they have the guidance of a strong dominant, have little control of their wolf form the first few times they change. It would also explain why he didn't notice that I was different from the humans around. You have to be taught how to use your senses.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.